1.3 of Cowboys Crunch Time with KB, the latest and greatest in conversation about your Dallas Cowboys. We have another great show for you as we continue our off-season evaluations and permeations for Cowboys Nation. I'm back after a brief hiatus. Family and health kept me away from the mic, but this should now be a recurring feature that you can look forward to. As you know, you can read my musings on bloggingtheboys.com, slumming along, surrounded by the most talented collection of Cowboys writers never to have access to a locker room or press conference. You can also follow me on Twitter at KDP10for10, that's at KDP10for10. I also man the BTB account at bloggingtheboys and the Facebook page bloggingtheboys. Now, let's cover some generic NFL topics before we dive into some Cowboys talk, shall we? Please, somebody tell me, what is the deal with the wussification of the American sports fan? Derrick Rose tears his ACL in the NBA playoffs in the waning minutes of Game 1. He shouldn't have been in the game. Mo Rivera tears his ACL shagging flies. He's too old to be doing that, even though he's been doing that for his entire career. In the NFL, Terrell Suggs tears his Achilles, and initially reported to be while playing basketball. You could just see the wheels turning in people's head what they were about to say until the reports came out that it was during some conditioning test that he was training for. In basketball, he has a football career. Shut up, people. Just shut it up. Better yet, man up, because things just happen. These people don't live in a vacuum. Things happen, injuries happen, accidents happen. Just because you have a multi-million dollar career doesn't mean that the rest of your life shuts down just because you have a huge contract. Now, moving on. NFL did something that I definitely appreciate. DirecTV Sunday Ticket is now going for just $199 for the season. There is a catch for those that haven't investigated yet. It's without the Red Zone channel. That actually works for me, as last year, I think it was my third year in a row, getting the package, and it was over $300 last year. I didn't turn into the Red Zone channel, but maybe one time. You know, it was very nostalgic at first, being able to see them switch from scoring opportunity to scoring opportunity. But I like to watch whole games. So when I'm flipping through, I like to see, you know, a course of a series of plays and things of that sort. So Red Zone channel didn't do it for me. Now, you can still order the Red Zone channel. There's a package that costs an extra $100 that includes the Red Zone channel and some other stuff that goes along with it. But for those of you that just want the ability to watch all your Cowboys games and then, you know, whatever else is a game of the week that's not being shown on national TV, go ahead and you can get the package for $199. Kudos to the NFL for that. Finally, I have something good to say about the league. Now, on the flip side, the NFL Top 100 that's on the NFL Network right now. Don't even waste a single breath over worrying that they have Tony Romo at number 91. You know why? Because here's what they did. They polled NFL players and asked them who were their top 20 counterparts in the league. They didn't give them a form to fill out. There wasn't a survey or anything like that. They just said, name your top 20 football players. So basically, by Tony Romo being ranked 91st, that just means that very few people ranked him in their top 20. It doesn't mean that people were filling out a list of every single NFL player, all 1,600, and he ended up being 91st. It just means that there weren't that many people that thought he was a top 20 player. And while I love Tony Romo and he's my quarterback and I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league, I can definitely understand with the fact that the Cowboys haven't made the playoffs in 2 years that people would think of him as being outside of the top 20. So that's not a real problem for me, but it's just the way that they make it seem, and they love to create controversy by putting him at 91 in close proximity to Tim Tebow. But don't get your underwear in a wad over this kind of thing, because it's really not saying that he's the 91st best player in the NFL. It's a sham. It's a travesty. It's a mockery. It's a travesty mockery. Just move on. Stop paying attention to it. Now, Cowboys rookie minicamp starts today. It runs through the weekend, May 4th through the 6th. All draftees, except for Maurice Claiborne, will be in attendance. Claiborne is still recovering from wrist surgery. Along with all the undrafted free agent signings, they'll all be there as well. Also in attendance will be first-year players such as Teddy Williams and Justin Taplin Ross. They'll be in attendance. So the Cowboys should have, you know, around 45 players. It should be pretty nice to see To get reports of what's going on out there with these rooks as they start to get inundated with the Cowboys system, especially on the defensive side with Rob Ryan's scheme. And there's a lot of secondary players that are going to be going through the motions right now. So it'll definitely be interesting to see who exactly is going to be taking the place of the fifth corner or the backup safety, to see if there's going to be any competition for Danny McCray and Barry Church, things like that. Overall, it's just going to be very interesting. Tyrone Crawford will be there. Matt Johnson will be there. Kyle Wilbur will be there. It'll be our first look at seeing them run some plays in a professional setting. So, you know, definitely good things. It's the first sign of real football coming back. We love the draft. We love all the free agent signings, but this is actual on-the-field stuff. So, you know, it's just good to get back to football. Now, speaking of getting back to football, they did finalize a preseason schedule. We knew the opponents. We basically knew the dates, but they set all the times, so you know what time the games are going to come on TV. Is anyone else not liking the karma around ending the preseason playing the Miami Dolphins? I mean, you think Raymond Radway is looking forward to that game after seemingly earning a roster spot, only to break his leg late in the final preseason game against the Finns last season? I don't think so. It's the curse of Jeff Ireland. Put someone else on the schedule in the future, please. Okay? Thanks. Now, during the draft that just passed last weekend, I was tweeting with Bob Sturm and a few followers on Twitter after I brought up the discussion point of Dallas seeming to be satisfied with what they had at interior offensive line. Now, as I've suggested a few times, it appears that the Cowboys will find their 2012 center out of a group of Kevin Kowalski, David Arkin, Bill Nagy, and even possibly Phil Costa. I mentioned the rumor that I had heard that almost immediately after last year's draft, Hudson Houck began coaching Arkin up on the nuances of playing the center position in hopes he could turn him into one. That was kind of his vision for him, that they were going to try to make him a center. I don't know if that was how they drafted him or if that occurred after they decided to jettison Andre Girard and move on with the Yuglies movement. But Arkin was being coached up pretty much all year, as far as, you know, word has it, to become a center. Now, obviously, Hudson Houck is no longer in charge. Bill Callahan is. So the Sturminator brought an end to my line of thinking pretty quickly when he suggested that the new offensive line regime does not see the pro potential in Arkin based on the film that they've watched and might not even have him in the Cowboys' future plans at all. Stern mentioned that in his inside track, Birdie tells him, maybe we should put our money on Bill Nagy winning the starting center job, or at least getting the first crack as it is when camp opens up. Now, since then, I've heard reports that Arkin has spent the offseason going to the same camp that Montre Holland went to when he was first cut by the Cowboys last offseason, and he came back in great shape when he was re-signed by the team. He was supposedly at this camp that got him in better shape and put him in the right mindset and so on and so forth that allowed him to come back and actually be one of the Cowboys' better offensive linemen last year. So I'm not saying all is lost for Arkin. Once you get on the field, you have a chance to change the mind of your coaches, and it'll be interesting to see if he can do that given the opportunity. But for right now, basically whatever Callahan seemed to have seen on tape was not impressive, and he was looking to go in a different direction possibly. Now, also during the draft, some of my Twitter followers on the blog and the boys account and I got into a discussion about the value of the young backup quarterback. I had mentioned that I would, before he was drafted by the Redskins, that I would be interested in bringing in Kirk Cousins as a possible, you know, down the line 3 or 4 year replacement for Tony Romo if during that time frame Tony Romo started to falter a bit, you know, because he is up there in age, even though he didn't play for the first few years. So we don't know where the wear and tear is on his body, where that clock is ticking from. But there is a possibility that in 3 or 4 years, Tony Romo's play might start to decline and we might have to start looking for an option. Now, in the discussion back and forth, I mentioned that even if we were to draft somebody like Cousins and Romo's clock wasn't ready to expire and he looked like he could play for the next 8 years, it would basically be great business sense to have a young stud quarterback that you could package in a deal, trade for better draft picks. You get a fourth, you trade him for 2 twos, and you're in a win-win situation. I was actually told that somebody found somebody dumber than Jerry Jones for suggesting that fact. And I said, well, I guess if you consider Ron Wolf and the Philadelphia Eagles dumber than Jerry Jones, then, you know, so be it. Because Ron Wolf made a career out of drafting middle-round quarterbacks while Brett Favre was in his prime and flipping them for draft picks. The Philadelphia Eagles have commanded bounties based on that premise. I mean, did you see what they got for Kevin Cole? They got a second-round pick and a cornerback, and then the new team signed him to a 60-year, $60 million deal, and Kevin Cobb isn't even any good. So we're talking about endless people that have done this. I mean, Matt Schaub was a backup, and he was traded for, you know, a couple second-round picks. The list is endless of the amount of quarterback that this has happened to. So my only problem with the Redskins doing it, outside of the fact that they're the Redskins, is the fact that it makes no sense how they picked Kirk Cousins, because RG3 is going to need every single snap during the preseason, during the regular season, in order to inundate himself into that offense. So if he's getting every snap, or at least should be, with the first team offense, then how does Kirk Cousins grow and basically improve himself over that time frame? It makes absolutely no sense to me why they would do that, although I obviously saw the value in Kirk Cousins in the fourth round as well. So, now, moving on to our draft picks, because this is what you really want to talk about, isn't it? Morris Claiborne, tell me, what do you believe in? If the Cowboys had stayed put and drafted David DeCastro, Kendall Reyes, and cornerback Dwight Bentley or Omar Bolden, are they better than they are with Mo Claiborne and Tyrone Crawford? What about if they had selected Michael Brockers and Bobby Wagner as a pseudo-release to the public and one of the remaining corners? Because isn't that what you're really asking when you're wondering if Dallas did the right thing by trading up for pick six? Well, regardless, Mo Claiborne is a Cowboy, and if you're not happy about it, you will have 5 years to get accustomed to it. The number one defensive prospect in the draft has cover corner ability, shut down corner possibilities, and a ball hawk mentality that, while it may lead to a big gain if the safety play isn't coordinated, is something this team has sorely lacked for years. The best part about Mo Claiborne might be the most overlooked, and that's secondary coach Jerome Henderson. Remember, Henderson helped coach up Joe Hayden in Cleveland to a phenomenal rookie campaign. 50.1 QB rating against, 6 picks, 53% completion percentage against, 6.6 yards per target against. Now, I said in a separate situation that I would be ecstatic if Claiborne could produce a yards per target against under 7 and a QB rating against under 70, because that would just let me know that he has the elite gene in him. But, I mean, those numbers for Hayden are phenomenal. Now, obviously, you have to have the talent, but I will also say that getting somebody prepared for the NFL, I'm going to give some of the credit to the secondary, to the position coach. So, if Jerome Henderson can do that for Joe Hayden, if he can contribute that, then I'm ecstatic in the fact that we have him now and that Claiborne is going to be in his hands. I wish they could get to work during this rookie minicamp right now and they could actually get some one-on-one sessions in on the field. But, you know, it is what it is, and soon enough they'll get to training together and we'll be able to see what Claiborne can do. Now, our second pick, third round pick, is Tyrone Crawford. His combination of athleticism and strength at the combine exceeded that of what J.J. Watt did last year, along with all of the 2012 competitors. And then when you add on that his production ratio, shout out to OCC, sacks plus tackles for losses divided by games played, of 1.62, think about that. For every game he played, he had over 1.5 sacks plus tackles for losses. That means that he drove the offense backward at least 1.5 times per game, most of the time twice a game. That's impact. In fact, he outpaced all defensive ends from 2011 not to mention 2012, except for Ryan Kerrigan and J.J. Watt. Now, that's good company, because you know what they did in their rookie campaigns. Our own front page writer, Brandon Worley, watched plenty of Boise State football, and he vouched for Crawford as soon as the announcement was made. High motor, great strength in an athletic body, great pursuit. Now, Crawford has work to do to become a three-down player. He'll start off as like a 4-2-5 nickel guy. Can you imagine that pass rush? We have Crawford, Lissamore, and Ratliff, and then where? Me likey. But Crawford can put on some weight under Mike Bosick. Right now he's around 280. We want to get him up to 290, 295. And hopefully he'll be able to stand up to double teams and being crashed down on, which is something that he shows some problems with on the game film, on the highlight reels that we've been able to get our hands on. Now, Brian Baker, our defensive line coach, and Rob Ryan, defensive coordinator, will have to teach him some techniques, a lot of techniques, because right now you can see that he relies on his athleticism and his strength, which is uncanny for somebody that doesn't look that big. He has uncanny strength. But the raw ability for this JUCO transfer is saliva-inducing. Now, we have plenty to say about the rest of the draft picks: Kyle Wilbur, Matt Johnson, Caleb McSurdy, Danny Cole, the wide receiver. But for now, we're going to leave it at that as we go ahead and sign off for this episode 1.3 of Cowboys Crunch Time. Make sure that you come back to us. We'll always be available for you. We are now downloadable on iTunes. I know a lot of you were waiting for that, so the information will be made available to you in the post on Blogging the Boys on how exactly to do that. So I appreciate your time. This has been KD with Cowboys Crunch Time. Don't forget to check us on Blogging the Boys, where we have all of the news, all of the stats, all of the opinions, all of the analysis, everything you need to know about the Dallas Cowboys. Salute.